Hey, what's up, everybody? Chad Kalick here, keeping the top 10 list going of the best episodes of the In a Crowded Room podcast. Coming in at number 8 is episode number 35, in which for the first time ever, I share with you the countless terrifying details that, due to time constraints, were never included in the Paranormal State Church of the Damned episode. This is the episode where Ryan was tackled by something as I was in this hidden room being growled at. Trust me when I tell you, this was a truly disturbing case. With that being said, enjoy episode number 35. Hey, what's up, everybody? Chad Kalick here, and welcome back to the In a Crowded Room podcast. Before we get going, I just want to apologize for missing two uploads the last two nights in a row. This is going to happen from time to time when I get really deep on edit. Having said that, this is episode number 35, which I'm going to answer another fan question that I think actually makes for a really good episode, which I was asked, was there any episode of Paranormal State that you were scared the entire time? The answer is yes. Now, I think there's a difference between scared and fear. Like, real fear I experienced on IM6. But when I think of scared, I just think of creep factor. Like, I'm just creeped out the whole time, and I'm just unnerved the whole time, and uncomfortable. And it's not necessarily like a core fear, but just like, this is creepy. And that occurred in Topeka, Kansas, on a case at an old abandoned church. The episode was called The Church of the Damned. It was this old abandoned church that had 110 upside down crosses built into it. There had clearly been all kinds of satanic rituals done there, animals killed there. It was owned by a father who had adopted two sons, and their hope and goal was that they would turn this church into like a boys club, or like a boys and girls club, or a children's center. But unfortunately, they were having all kinds of negative experiences. They had seen black shadow people, they were hearing screaming at night in the church, footsteps, they were being touched. And there was one area specifically that the youngest son could not get anywhere near inside the church without absolutely freaking out and losing his mind. In which, of course, they sent yours truly down there alone to see what was going on. But let's start at the beginning here, now that you have the background. Before I went to this case, I actually had a nightmare that I was going to get hurt on the next case. And usually I don't pay attention to nightmares at all, you know, because they're just dreams or dreams or dreams. But this seemed so realistic. Like, when I woke up, it just seemed real. So it did freak me out, and I had a really weird feeling going into the case. But I had heard the day before that we might not actually go and do this case because there was a freaking blizzard that was heading towards Kansas at that time. And what we knew is that we could probably get into Topeka, but about 10 hours after we got there, you know, it would be just overrun with snow through this blizzard that was coming. And then we may or may not be able to get out of there. But since filming is 3 days with the potential for a fourth, we went ahead and decided to go there thinking that the worst of it would be past us by the third or fourth day. So we leave LA, and I fell asleep on the plane. Went to a connecting flight somewhere right away. It was a short flight. And then crashed out, and I remember my eyes opening right as we hit the runway in Kansas. And my God, was it cold. It was so cold. In fact, with the wind chill, it was like negative 30-some degrees. The actual low, like the low that night, was supposed to be negative 18. Now, I learned on the way there from reading the call sheet that this church had no heat. It had no heat. So I'm wondering, how are we going to investigate if it's negative 18 degrees? How are batteries going to stay charged? How are we not going to die? So it was pretty funny. When I got there, the church itself is extremely menacing. The upside down crosses didn't freak me out as much as I thought they would, but I figured out right away, just from my religious studies courses, that the upside down crosses, I believe, were for St. Peter. And so it was a Catholic church at some point, I think. But what was interesting is they ran all the deeds and they ran the back, and they never could find out who actually built the place. They knew who the last owner was, but the building was established almost like 60 years before that owner, and they didn't have the original landowner deed. So they didn't even know who built the actual church, just who owned it now. But after walking around that place, there was an overwhelming feeling of uncomfortableness throughout the whole thing. And I said this a while ago, after doing this for so many years, you can just pick up when a place is haunted. And it's not a psychic thing. It's just like, how can I describe this? Like when you go to a cemetery, you can just feel the residual sadness. You can just feel there's just a vibe. It's kind of like that. After you do enough haunting, legitimately haunted places and haunting cases, you just start getting a vibe that something is off. And a lot of times it feels like someone's watching you when no one's there. That's the best way I could describe it. I feel like somebody's watching me when nobody's there. I felt that throughout this entire place. So I met the client super briefly, just enough to shake their hand, say hello, that type of thing. And I had heard something really strange. I heard that there was a main floor, and then there was a basement, and then there was this area where the basement floor was caving in, and they found like this secret floor that would be like a second basement, and this secret door and room that you go into, and there was four toilets, but there was no stall doors. Just a room with four toilets with no stall doors, and it was a secret room. Which to me, that has deviant written all over it. I was like, what is this doing in a church? And then I find out that this is the area, this room is the corner of the church in the area of the church, and this room in general is the place where the one son cannot get anywhere near without freaking out. So the first night that we're there, Ryan's talking to this one son about this area and asks him if he'll go there with him. And he doesn't want to go. And through further conversation, he finally decides that he's going to try, which he does. And I'm documenting all of this, just filming, not saying a word, just filming. And as we get closer and closer to that corner, I mean, you could see it. This guy's bottom lip starts to shake. You could see the sweat beading up on his head. All the things that you can't lie about. It just happens when your body naturally does not want to go near a place. His hands are shaking like he's having convulsions practically. And as he gets closer and closer and closer, he's breathing heavier and heavier. And he gets closer, closer, and closer. And he starts crying, and tears are just coming out of his eyes, and he doesn't want anything to do with that area. And it's really freaking me out because I'm watching this grown man have this massively adverse reaction to this area. And I'm like, what happened there that is like kryptonite to this guy? Like, the room to me seems like some deviant child sex room or something weird, something sexual went on down there that was really bad. And my belief is that this guy had something in his life that connected there, whether it was subconsciously. I'm not saying anything happened to him as a child or not, but something in his life subconsciously connected to that area, and that energy collided. And he just could not get close to it. And the area freaked me out. I felt a vibe too. I mean, I really felt a vibe, especially it was so weird. You had to go down these stairs that you could barely fit through, and then the floor was caving in. And I would have to kind of traverse this wall and barely get to this second entrance without falling down even further below, like there's a sinkhole or something, to go through the small door that opens up inside this room with all these toilets, like I was saying. So it was just ungodly creepy. So after seeing this guy respond this way, we're all, freaked out. But on top of that, we're all freezing because to combat the cold, there was a couple space heaters that we were able to run through one room, and there was a generator that connected to these space heaters, and it kept that room right at about, I don't know, maybe 40, 50 degrees, just warm enough where computers could run, where we can, keep batteries charged, things like that. But it was still cold. You could still see your breath in that room. So we were trying to figure out ways to go do dead time and to go investigating in negative 20 degree temperatures. So the solution was hilarious. And you don't see this during the episode, but it's so funny. I'm sure it probably gave the audio department nightmares. But those like they're like chemical bags that you shake and they get hot. You like buy them at like truck stops and you crack them and you shake them. And then you peel them off and you can put them inside your gloves or you could stick them anywhere you want on your body and they generate heat. Well, these things were called hot hands. So we went out and bought like hundreds of these hot hands. I bet I had 60 hot hands packets stuck to me when I was walking around. I lined my legs with them, my arms, my chest, my neck, the inside of my jacket. And man, let me tell you what, those things kick out some heat. You get like 70 of those things stuck to your body, you are cooking. It actually got warm at times. We actually started sweating. I'm like, Jesus, these things are hot. But what's funny is when you'd walk, it sounded like the Sandman. It was just like, shh, 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 like with every step. So I'm sure, the audio department had a blast trying to edit that out. But it was the only way that we could actually, get around. And so the first night starts, and I'm told I'm going to the room with the four, stalls, the hidden room downstairs. And on the way down there, you're just seeing these upside down pentagrams, what is clearly animal blood from somebody killing animals. We were told beforehand that yes, they've ran out squatters and different groups locally that are into Satanism, and that's a very real thing in Topeka, supposedly. People throughout the town believe that the building is possessed with evil. So it is just creepy. And not only that, churches have just always freaked me out. Churches have such a creepy vibe to them. And this church has a major creepy vibe to it. So during that investigation, Ryan is along with Taddy, and they're going to go on the main floor, and then I'm going to go down to that room. So it takes me a while to actually traverse my way and get down to that room. And when I finally do, I could hear everybody. We have these earpieces in, so I can hear everybody and where they're at and what they're doing. And I'm the furthest away from the control center now because of the cold. Not exactly everything is working like it should. It's cutting out, but it's working. Like you could hear people talking, and then it's dropping, and the call come back on, it would drop again. But I could hear everybody pretty good, but people are having a hard time hearing me. What I know is that I'm the furthest from the control center, and I'm on the other side of the building from Ryan and Heather. So as I'm down there, I have to admit that I am very freaked out. Just being in that room with those toilets, but no stalls, you could just imagine what's going on down there. So right away, I usually try to combat my own fear with aggression, and I start just provoking right away. And as I'm provoking, I could hear in my earpiece just Ryan and Heather just talking, just back and forth. And Heather starts reading something, and right away, I just start provoking, and I hear the lowest, clearest, just like this low grumbling growl, and it's got bass to it, and it sounds like it's right outside the door from where I'm at. And I am just like, oh my God. Because it just dawned on me right when that happened, man, it took me forever to get down here. To get out of here would take twice as long. And there's nobody near me. I mean, I am so far away from Ryan, from the control center. There's no crew with me. There's nothing, just me. But right as I hear that brrr sound, I radio back and I say, hey guys, there is something growling right outside this door. And right after that happens, I just hear this calamity. Ryan's freaking out, saying stuff, and Taddy is, and there's just all this stuff going on. And I'm like, what is going on? What's happening, everybody? But they can't really hear what I'm saying either. So what I quickly figure out is that something happened to Ryan at that time, in which the entire production company, I mean, that's listen, Ryan's the star of the show. That's the money boy. So I mean, if something happens to him, I could damn near get shot. They still wouldn't, pay attention to me. So I realize I'm on my own and I need to get out of there because no one can hear me. Even if they can, they're not coming because something happened with Ryan, which was a very uncomfortable feeling. So right as I start walking towards the door, I hear this latching sound, like a door locked. But the weird thing is, this door, the way it's sitting, it's just this old wooden plank that's pushed up against the wall. There's no lock on the door. There's no door handle on the door. It was almost like a residual lock. It was just incredible. I was like, what is that? It really sounded like it wanted to convince me that it locked me in. But again, there's no lock. I mean, it was fascinating, but scary. So, as much strength and as courage as I can to muster up to get out of that room, I'm just like pushing as fast as I can, as hard as I can. And right when I get to the bottom and jump across this like area that leads to like a sinkhole, you got to jump to reach these stairs. Right as I land on the stairs, right behind me again, I hear the roar sound. I'm like, oh my Jesus. So I get upstairs and I just go sprinting as fast as I can back to the control center. And when I get back there, everyone is freaking out, saying that something threw Ryan to the ground. And Taddy, I pull her to the side and I'm talking to her, and she's like, yeah, I don't know what happened. Just something grabbed him and threw him. And she's like, I just barely missed it when it happened, but she was there. And the cameraman is telling me, yeah, you need to talk to your boy. He's fucked up right now. So I just start, talking to Ryan a little bit. The weird thing is, Ryan's brain is like resetting like every 20 seconds. It's like there's trauma, like where he would forget what we talked about 20 seconds ago, but he would forget it over and over and over again. And we were having a discussion as to whether or not we just shut things down for the night and go back the next day. And Ryan would say, no, I want to go back again tonight. But then 20 seconds later, he would start the same discussion up like we didn't just have it. You understand what I'm saying? So it was so weird. It was literally like, yo, bro, like you're forgetting that we just talked about everything we're talking about right now 20 seconds ago. It really was like trauma had shut down his brain and it was restarting at that time. And it goes back to that diabolical confusion that I talked about, is that whenever this dark energy, whatever it is, when it touches you, goes through you, lays hands on you, whatever it is, it screws with your brain. You can't see right, you can't think right, you can't really hear things right. And I did not want to go back. I did not want to go back down there. I just felt like, again, whenever people start getting hurt or thrown around, I mean, it's not a race, you know. Just let's just get a better plan. Like, why are we running back down there again? Like, we have time. There's no one making us do this, so let's figure this out and figure out a way to do it where we have the upper hand. But Ray wanted to go back, so I eventually said, "Well, if he's going back, then I'm going to go back with him." And I was just going to try to protect him and make sure he was okay to the best of my ability. And I think Sergi agreed he wanted to go down too. So we went back with Rye, and he just basically buttoned it up. We were down there for like 5 minutes, and he just basically said to whatever it is that we would be back. We'd be back the next day, and that we were not done. And that's how the first night of the investigation went. So the next day comes, and we're having discussions about what we're going to do. You know, if we're going to go back out there, what's the plan? And it was brought up again right away that I should just go back to that room, which I said, what for? Like, that's the ground zero of this whole place. And the reason I felt that way is, first off, it's the place that's clearly built to do bad things. Okay, this thing was designed in secret. And there's nothing that went on there that was good. This is the room in the area that the son can't get near without his body going into convulsions out of fear. I was just down there and recorded the residual sound of a door locking as I'm trying to get out. You know, let's not forget the whoa, like sound of growling twice at me. I mean, my job on Paranormal State was just to document evidence, period. And I'm going, okay, let's see. Ryan got thrown around, you know, couldn't remember things after 20 seconds. I recorded two growls. I recorded the sound of a door locking, and the youngest son can't get anywhere near that room. So what the fuck am I going back down there again for? I mean, there was just no reason. It's like, yep, case solved. This satanic church is haunted as shit. So yeah, everybody agreed. And Ryan and Chip decided they were going to go down there, and that was fine because they were going to do rituals, Catholic stuff. You know, the Saint Michael. They were going to take, you know, Saint Michael's medal down there. And how I feel about that, I never took part in religious stuff on Paranormal State. If you watch any episode, you will never see me involved in any religious ritual, only because I was certain that I was spiritual, but I did not have anything figured out in regard to denomination. And I just feel as though if you're going to approach something with a religious belief system, everybody in that room better believe in the same thing, because there's power in belief. And if somebody doesn't, then I think they're the weak link, you know? And I never want to be that weak link. And I also want to respect religious beliefs. So Ryan and Chip, being devout Catholic, they both believe that they can go down there, say the Saint Michael's saying that they do their prayers, and they can cast this thing out, whatever it was, or at least they could try to get it to leave. So they chose to do that, but they took with them a thermal cam, and something incredible happened down there, and it was captured on film, and it is absolutely legitimate. They went down there, and it went from being negative 20 degrees to plus 40 degrees in a split second in that room. And it came, what's odd is it came right after Chip did his Saint Michael's prayer. Right after he said amen, it went from negative 20 degrees to plus 40 degrees. Now, again, there's no heat, there's no running water, there's nothing. Right after that happened, Ryan got very lightheaded, and they gave me the footage to review, and it blew my mind. I mean, it absolutely blew my, it blew everybody's mind. And there was this funny moment where everybody was talking how, and I get it, I get the excitement, but I felt like I'm maybe the only one that was seeing this through goggles that weren't religious. But everyone was saying we need to contact like CNN or the news because we have, you know, legitimate proof. And you know, Ryan kept saying that this is something miraculous, like this happened. It went from negative 20 degrees to plus 40 without any explanation. This is incredible. And I agree, it was incredible. But they were like saying this happened because of a prayer. This was a divine thing that happened. This was a religious, spiritual thing. And I was just trying to play the devil's advocate and say, if I'm CNN or any news source, and you tell me that you need me to look at this footage because I was ghost hunting and I cast this demon out. I mean, it's just like there's nobody that's going to take this thing seriously. And that's what sucks about the world at that time. And it's gotten better now. More and more people, because of the web, because of these shows, are more open about their beliefs. But I just remember thinking, there's just no way. There's no way that the media and the press is just going to take our word for it that this happened, especially, with the amount of things that we experienced. I mean, there's just, I wish people weren't as skeptical as they were, but the facts are, listen, 99.99% of the people in the world have never spent the night in a haunted church in a secret area that was designed and built to do something nefarious, right? So unless you've done that, you don't know what goes on there. And if you don't know, you're going to be skeptical. And I remember feeling like I was just peeing in everybody's Cheerios because I was like the guy that was like, no one's going to believe this, guys. Let's just quit talking about this idea of going to the press. And eventually it was abandoned, the idea of going to the press. And just because the other thing too is when you're a part of a reality show, there's just a degree of skepticism that people have because of that as well, And I knew this was legitimate. This was an incredible piece of evidence. I actually ended up calling the FLIR, the company FLIR, and sending them the footage. And I did this on my own time. And it's a pretty funny story. I asked the guy at FLIR, I said, so what's going on here? And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, have you watched the footage? And he's like, yeah. And I said, well, is the camera malfunctioning in any way that you can see? And he goes, no, I mean, the camera's just reading the room, it reads the temperature, that's what it does. And I said, well, I mean, how do you explain that? And he pauses and he says, I don't know. You're the ghost hunter, dude. You tell me. Which I thought was pretty funny. So it was an incredible, incredible piece of footage. And there was basically, to wrap it all up, they did essentially kind of a deliverance ritual on the building, where they went around and did a clearing, I guess you can call it. And from what I understood, it worked for a while, but then things started happening. And then shortly after that same year, I believe it was, I had heard that the father had passed away. After we had done the case, which my first thought was, oh, jeez, because the father really took care of the boys. And I was thinking, man, if the father's gone and those two boys are still living in there alone now, and that one boy is just afraid to death of that corner, oh, man, that's got to be a tough situation. But that entire case was just as uncomfortable as it gets. I mean, it was scary. I mean, the visuals of it all, there was just never a comfortable moment. The cold was unbearing. That place was haunted big time. And I remember I was standing outside, I went outside to have a cigarette, and as cold as it was, I saw this one kid that was sledding. He was on this little sled that he was riding up and down the streets. And I noticed he crossed the street before he crossed the building. And I said to him, hey man, you don't want to come sled down this end? He's like, nah, I stay away from that building. And I'm like, why? And he goes, everyone knows it's possessed by the devil. I'm like, what? He goes, yeah. He's like, I can't believe you guys are in there. And it's like this kid's maybe 8 or 9, and he knows to stay away from this building because it's possessed by the devil. Which was pretty crazy to me, but that case, it was incredible. It was totally incredible. I do often wonder now what's going on with that building. So if you're listening to this and you're in the Topeka, Kansas area, let me know what you've heard. I would love to know the resolve and result of what happened. I haven't even heard what happened to the sons either. Like I said, I just know the father passed away, which rest in peace, but I hope the one boy, I hope he found spiritual resolve because it was really, really, really hard watching him react to that room in that fashion. It was crazy. So that is the one case that sticks with me as probably the most scary as far as being there just the whole time. There was just nowhere There was no shelter, you know, from anything, from the weather, from spiritually, from the darkness, from all of it, you know, just there was no shelter. It just, it felt like you could never escape anything. But yeah, that case is really, really crazy. So having said that, thank you guys once again for listening to the In a Crowded Room podcast. I will be back again tomorrow with more. All the best.